And a very good morning to you at 11 a.m. Hi there, I'm Kermit Poling, General Manager here at Red River Radio, listening to a little bit of Mozart in the background there as I'm joined in the studio for a spotlight by Michael Butterman, Music Director of the Shreveport Symphony. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Kermit.
And welcome back, as always, usually here the day before a concert, and that is true this time around. And Mozart is, at least in part, what we'll be hearing on the concert. Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on tomorrow.
Yeah, so we have this concerto, the fifth violin concerto of Mozart, along with the fifth symphony of Franz Schubert, and in fact that piece by Schubert, written when he was all of 19 years old, is a work that we know is very much inspired by Mozart. In fact, there are some diary entries from around that time where Schubert is extolling the virtues of Mozart's music, and I think you can really hear a certain Mozartian spirit, charm in that symphony, really from the very opening notes,
sure.
But especially in the scherzo, it's the third movement, which is actually a minuet, mm-hmm. But it very much reminds me, because it's in a minor key, it's kind of lively, it's a lot like the scherzo from the third movement of Mozart 40, I think, his symphony
yeah.
number 40.
Yeah.
So I think there is a connection between those two pieces for sure, and then there is a almost no connection between those two pieces. And the other work on the program, which opens the concert, and that is music by Johnny Greenwood, who, if your listeners don't know, is the lead guitarist for Radiohead. Not a composer whose name is often associated with classical music concerts, but I think will be in increasing frequency in years to come. He's a really rather prolific composer, especially of film scores, and we're playing the suite from his score to There Will Be Blood, that film from 2007. Really inventive score that is, well, as I said, entirely from a different world than the Schubert and Mozart that conclude the program.
Sure. Well, and the guest artist on this concert is Francisco Fiana, who is an A.B. Fischer Career Grant winner, I think last year, if
exactly.
I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
And has a great career, young violinist that is just a phenomenal player. And he's actually waiting in the performance studio to play. So we'll have him in here to chat with us in just a little bit. But I thought it'd be kind of nice to start off with a little violin music.
Sounds good.
So here's Francisco Fiana playing the music of Fritz Kreisler.
Thank you.
All right. Violinist Francisco Fujana performing live in our Weiss Performing Studio here at Red River Radio, making his way into the control room at the moment. And that was, I'll give him a moment here to sit down and get ready. But Francisco, that was beautiful.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely beautiful. And very different from what you'll be playing tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the thing is, it doesn't come from that far away. You know, it's both Viennese.
That's true. Yeah.
Fritz Kreisler and Mozart. But, definitely quite different.
Yeah. So the concert, just for those of you who just happened to tune in, just to remind you, Shreveport Symphony's next performance is tomorrow evening. That's at 7:30 p.m. And it's a program that includes Mozart and Schubert. And also a piece written by the lead guitarist of Radiohead, as Michael has described earlier, and it is in First Baptist Church again for this concert. My understanding is that we're moving the next time around, but for this particular concert, and I think it fits very, very well, we'll be in the sanctuary of First Baptist. So talk a little bit about now that you're in here about the violin concerto.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just one of the staples of the violin repertoire. You know, actually, it was my very first performance with orchestra. I played the first movement of this piece back in my hometown of Mallorca, of Spain. But yeah, I mean, it just has so much brightness, so much joy. And in the particular case of the A major concerto, especially in the last movement, you know, it's nicknamed Turkish.
Yes.
And it has this middle section that it really almost doesn't sound like Mozart. I mean, it's like this crazy Turkish band. And it has the cellos doing this kind of ricochet, and I'm playing on top, like very loud and very brash. And it's, I would say that contrast of the last movement always is definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah, well, the Turkish style became almost, you know, kind of like in vogue at the time. I mean, and of course, Austria, previous to that, they did not have great relationships with the Ottoman Empire, so it would have still been they would have recognized the sound of the Turkish military bands, and that I think is what Mozart's trying to imitate, especially with all the banging of the colegno, the sticks on that, to get that military band sound. And yet it doesn't quite sound like a military band, nor does it sound like it's certainly not Turkish folk music. It's just that and I can't remember the name. Michael, you probably know what the name of that style. It begins with a J.
Oh, the Janissary.
Janissary. That's it. Yeah, my was dry. But that is exactly what it's imitating. And of course, Mozart did that in other works. But it really kind of has its peak, at least to me, in this concerto.
Yes.
So it's that section is a lot of fun if you listen for it. I got to say, it's a wonderful sounding instrument that you had there. Very, very deep, rich, rich sound. What are you playing?
Well, I'm lucky enough to play on the Mary Portman Guarneri from 1735. It's actually, at one point, it was its most famous owner was Fritz Kreisler himself.
Yeah, perfect.
So there's a reason why, you know, I do include a lot of Kreisler in my recitals, and definitely when I play in the radio, things like this, because it is pretty crazy to think that the piece piece like the Recitativo that I've just played, that he actually composed it, performed it on this violin 100 years ago.
It's like his soul is in that instrument.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, some people have all the luck. Well, you deserve it. Sounds absolutely fantastic. So the fifth violin concerto, the Turkish concerto, that's one piece on the concert. Michael, you talked about the Schubert, the fifth symphony a little bit. Talk about the other piece.
Yeah. So I was talking with Francisco earlier today about this. So you know, Greenwood is someone who studied composition, played viola, is sort of enamored of a lot of 20th century classical composers, people like Penderecki and Ligeti and Messiaen. In fact, there is a moment in the first movement of this suite where he calls for Ons Martinon, which is an instrument that Messiaen sort of made famous and basically one of the only composers who ever calls for that
it's
instrument.
True.
It's going to be actually played by the oboe in our particular case here. But he creates, with the most traditional part of the orchestra, the strings, he creates some absolutely otherworldly, untraditional sounds. And he does it through a number of unusual techniques. At one point, he has everybody in the string section using guitar plectra, guitar picks, basically, to create a percussive effect, but a really edgy one. He asks us to involve quarter tones a lot, and those quarter tones are those notes that we can't really produce on a piano because it's not tuned that way. The notes that come between C and C sharp, for example, there is a halfway note there, and more than that, of course. When you have a violin, you can produce an infinite number of gradations of pitch between notes. And so anyway, we are called upon to play these clusters of notes, chords basically, which are there not to create so much a melody or a theme that people will recognize, but really to create a mood. And that if you've seen the movie, you know the mood of that film is, it is bleak. It's a fairly dark film, I think it's fair to say. It deals with one side of the human condition, let's put it that way, which is quite antithetical to the sort of really beautiful, optimistic positivity that we hear in the music of Mozart and Schubert, for that matter. But anyway, it's very evocative of... let me put it this way. If you haven't seen the film, it doesn't really matter, because you will come and you will hear this music and you cannot help but conjure up images and feelings. I don't know if they'll be exactly what is in the film, but they will be something of a similar style and mood, because it's just so... ripe, so pungent, this the way that he has written this music. Let's see, what else does he have you do? He has you, you know, a lot of glissandos, little slides between notes, but over a long period of time.
Right.
He has
trills.
Unusually slow trills. Yeah. He has random bow changes on a held note that kind of give this sense of pulsing, but not really. It has you trilling.
Wide intervals.
Wide intervals, like fifths and so on. But people doing it at different rates and different times. It just creates... just, you know, a real panoply of different possibilities. And really, at one point on the in the suite, every single person on the stage is playing a different part. He's broken down the orchestra into whatever it is, 30-some different individual parts, essentially, and given each person, literally on the stage, their own part to play, which is not typical for classical concerts.
And where that sounds like it would be cacophonous, it's part of an overall effect.
It is,
and
absolutely.
The effect is what works.
I suppose practicing this is probably not the by yourself in a room is probably not the most gratifying thing when you've ever done. But putting it together is quite extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, how did you discover the suite?
You know, I don't know. I can't remember at this point. It's probably on the radio. Everything I learn about classical music these days comes from listening to the radio. I'm not just saying that because I'm on the radio right now.
It's okay. You can.
But
say
I discovered so much music by, especially performers today, listening to things that come across the way there. I mean, I've certainly know Radiohead's music, and I was aware that Greenwood had written, some quote unquote classical pieces. But I did not see the film when it came out in 2000. I've seen it more recently than that. But it is a score that probably should have won the Academy Award, if I can say that. It just didn't, because some of the music that was used in it was composed previously, and it was not. I think there's some technicality about that. But he's a fascinating. I mean, Radiohead itself is a fascinating band, I think, and one that really has pushed a lot of envelopes and in the alternative rock genre, and then to take that same sensibility and to bring it to traditional instruments, if you will. It makes a lot of it makes a lot of sense. It's clearly the same mind behind those two things.
It's interesting that there, and I think maybe people don't realize this, but there are a lot of rock bands that have been comprised of serious musicians who, yes, they went into that. But you think of bands like Bachman Turner, I'm talking about my era now, Bachman Turner Overdrive or Electric Light Orchestra, that type of thing. I mean, they were serious musicians.
For sure. And I'll just say the last time I did this piece, which is a couple months ago elsewhere, I paired it with this piece by John Lord, which we have done in Shreveport. John Lord was the founding keyboardist for Deep Purple, but wrote, you know, in a beautiful, sort of almost Vaughan Williams-like style as well. So there are these, you know, musicians have all sorts of sides to them. There are a lot of classical musicians who like to, you know, kind of play in very, very different styles when they're not sort of plying their trade as classical musicians. And and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. So so that piece by Johnny Greenwood starts off the concert. And again, we have Mozart's Fifth Violin Concerto, and Francisco will be performing that. And on the second half of the concert, Schubert's Symphony Number 5. So Mozart and Schubert have much more in common, but they're such magnificently beautiful pieces. And the Schubert, in some ways, I don't know why I always think of it as delicate. It's not necessarily a delicate piece all over, but it's got that lightness, that sparkle that reminds me of Mozart. And you talked about his inspiration, and yet it's unique unto itself.
It is, and you know, like everything that Schubert wrote, it's melodically rich. He was, of course, probably the great song composer maybe of all time. There's another connection, I guess. Right, Johnny Greenwood writes songs, I guess you could say, and so did Schubert.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is a lightness to it, but it's also identifiably a Schubertian. It is, you know, it was a piece that was written for basically his colleagues in a music school, essentially. Because, I mean, we had this great composer died when he was 31 years old, first of all. So literally everything he ever wrote is, quote-unquote, an early work.
That's true.
By definition, I think. that's one thing to kind of keep in mind. The second thing is that he didn't hear any of his symphonies, performed publicly during his lifetime. Even this Fifth Symphony, which did have a performance. Some of his symphonies didn't even have a performance that we know of. His Fifth Symphony did, but it was basically a bunch of his colleagues getting together in a private home and reading through this thing that their friend Franz had just written. And so it was written for available material: strings, a pair of oboes, a pair of bassoons, a pair of horns, no timpani, did I say this right? There is one flute.
There's flute, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But only one, not two.
Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, so it's really, it's small, but it was played in someone's home, basically. That's where it was debuted. And so it's kind of amazing just to think that these things were, they weren't written for 2,000-seat concert halls, many of them, that we are now associate with 2,000-seat concert halls.
That's true. Well, we'll have not quite 2,000 seats.
No, that's true.
But there are plenty of seats in First Baptist Church. But again, it's such a lovely acoustic, and I think for this music, it's going to match up really well, and also for the effects in the Greenwood.
Yeah, that's for sure. And also, remember, in First Baptist, we do have the cameras that are there to kind of capture some of the close-up action of what's going on the stage, including, you know, being able to see the soloist close up, which is, I think, a nice benefit. So just make sure.
I'll try not to distract myself, right? But looking at myself.
There is one. Yeah, you do. Have to
are you gonna look at yourself on the monitor? Yeah.
It's gonna get weird.
See yourself on the Jumbotron back there.
It's like, is that what I look like? Well, it's gonna be fun. Now, the concert is 7:30. You're gonna do the pre-concert talk.
Yes, Francisco and I will both be there at the pre-concert talk about 6:40 in the chapel. Ahead of time. So, please come to that and find out a little bit more about the program. A lot of stuff to share, and a good place to also ask some questions of Francisco, if you are interested.
Yeah, especially that fiddle. Oh. So, 7:30 p.m., 6:40 for the pre-concert talk, First Baptist Church. Information is at ShreveportSymphony.com. You can call 318-227-8863. That's TUNE, Think Tune, for tickets, or if you need to find out any other additional information. And it's going to be a terrific evening. I mean, you know, concerts always are, but this one I think is special in part because of the contrasts.
Yeah, I think if this were a menu, we have a couple of sort of traditional entrees, and then we've got something way out of left field to start off with as an appetizer.
I love it. Francisco, is there anything you want to add about the Mozart?
About the Mozart? I mean, I think, like I said, you know, look for that Turkish section. And then, in general, it's also the second movement has this beautiful, almost improvisatory quality. So it's almost like, I definitely feel like almost making it up on the spot. I mean, there are a lot of, you kind of play, you start always the phrase by yourself, and, you know, it's very, it has almost this cadenza kind of feeling. Talking about cadenzas, I was kind of going through the score with Michael today, And I'm actually playing the cadenzas from Robert Levin, who's the, you know, the famous pianist and obviously a great thinker of classical music and of the music of Mozart. But he actually wrote the cadenzas for the three last violin concertos, the G, the 3, 4, and 5, the G major, D major, and this one, the A major. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, it's the way it's built. It's really fun for the musician, for the performer, because it's almost like choose your own adventure. So you have these cadenzas that are, you know, written, and there's a couple of options for each movement. But then around it, he builds all these other endings and beginnings. And yeah, so every time I played it, I actually played slightly different. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. Michael, anything you want to add?
Well, I was just thinking that, I mean, he wrote five concertos. We hear 3, 4, and 5 the most, but they were all written within a really short period of time.
And very early also.
And very, very young. And I mean, do we know, probably when he was in Salzburg still, right? I think.
Yeah, he was actually, it was right around Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
So right around just about this time that this piece was composed, played. And then he never wrote any violin concerto ever again.
It's kind of, you know, he was both the pianist and the violinist early, but he didn't play violin when he was. He died young too. When he was quote unquote older,
slightly.
It was sort of like that was in my youth, and now I'm just going to go on to Vienna. I'm going to play piano concertos and write operas. But did we know, did he play these as a soloist when he was?
We don't know. There's nothing, I think, out there about that. But, you know, and then he went into viola as well. So
that's true.
He definitely loved the viola.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I do know the manuscripts at the Library of Congress, the original manuscript.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Actually in our Library of Congress. I have no idea why, but it's there. Along with some of his other manuscripts, Hofner Symphony and stuff like that, or a few rarities are there. But I don't know if there's any other historical information about that. But it's a great piece, and 3, 4, and 5 are the ones that are most played. But
Other two are great too, though.
Yeah,
they are. It's like the piano concertos, you know, the only like 6 or 7 of them get played a lot, but the rest are also incredible. So.
Yeah, and you're sitting there thinking, oh, talking about this violin stuff. You know this piece. You know that you know this music, and you're gonna love it. So again, tomorrow evening, 7:30. Information at ShreveportSymphony.com. So Francisco Fiana and Michael Butterman, I want to thank you both for coming in and joining me this morning for the Spotlight.
Thank you so much for having
us.
All right, and if you're with an organization, you have an event coming up, you want to be featured on a future Spotlight, give us a call at 800-552-8502.